This is Moss Whelan and Story in Mind. And deep in darkest Vancouver, as construction is going on. I can see a couple adventurers checking out the upmost reaches of the downtown public library. If I'm right, I have this memory of the library being like the building that it became a big lingerie store. And I could be wrong. Part of me wants to look that up and check if that's the right address and everything, if I'm correct about it. Because it's an unusual sort of memory / situation. It's crossing by and going, well, that's an odd thing for a library to become. And, so obviously the library has moved. There was a magic flight, and this is the topic for this episode. So this is a stage, this is a later stage in the hero's journey, and what I'm doing is I'm opening it up, I'm trying out stuff, I'm finding troubling stuff, things that sort of resonate for me, or say, even getting stuck and going, I don't understand this part of it. And looking for inspiration for myself, but also sharing, and just say asking the questions of its purpose, really. The underpinnings are, I would say, is it psychotherapeutic? Like that there's really, dream symbolism. That's something that's being looked at in a Jungian, a Carl Jung sense, where dreams come from. And I actually had a dream. It's very clear, and afterwards I found myself writing it down, but also pursuing the imagery, instead of like going, what is this? Why, like, longing for the dream, longing for its continuation. And interpretation. Tell us the dream, Tom Moss. Tell us the dream, Moss. I say, I'm not sure about it still. Like, say, parts of me are archetypes. A feminine archetype is there, and there's this group of people. They're working on something. There's a theatrical quality to it. That's about all I can say. The rest is a kind of jumble that couldn't be. I could not do justice to. It would more be kind of like a rambling. It's like, yeah, Moss, but you ramble, so come on. Let's talk about the magic flight. So this is after attaining the good stuff. The quest has been accomplished, and now we've got to get out of there with it, with the ultimate boon, this treasure, and got to get out of there. Very, was it Jack and the Beanstalk? And yet, rather than climbing down, it's an escape. One of the things that I liked seeing there was this comment from the text. So this would be from The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And the comment was along the lines of gods and goddesses jealously guarding this treasure. So they're guarding it. They don't want it taken. And that puts a twist on it. That puts this into a sort of like this delicious description of a comical pursuit, and that you say that there would be these demons and obstacles and things in the way, you know, attempting to stop the adventurer. So, magical flights. And I'm thinking of, you know, like the various, I don't want to say tropes. I want to say like objects and ways to do that. Sort of winged mounts, you know, big birds. Like Sesame Street? No, like as in, you know, huge falcons. Falcons that live for a millennium? Thank you. Thank you, imagination. And two, like say opportunities, allies, along those lines, help that can assist in the flight. I quite like the notion though of this escape. In the previous episode, I was wrestling and wrangling with why leave, right? If it's so good, right? And the addictive quality to it, to that. I'm also looking at that now as, say, oh, that's kind of jealously guarding, right? And I described the pitcher plant, which insects will get lured into, and then they will get stuck, and they will digest it in this kind of like stomach that the plant has, right, with the stomach acids. Very sickly sweet and sour stomach acids. And too, that's a great way to guard, to jealously guard something, is to, you know, make it so desirable to get into that you can't get out, or that it's very difficult to. But we're subverting, right? And that's the nature of this mini-series is to subvert, is to invert, turn this upside down. How can we do that? How can we do this differently? And too, with something so fun, right? Like, I'm imagining this, you know, huge, colorful bird that's agreed to get us out of there. And, or maybe it's a magic cloud along the lines of, you know, something a Monkey King would fly on. Once again, you know, great stuff. So we prepare for liftoff. You know, we're at the Celestial Airport, and we're preparing to depart. And we hear over the PA, the public address system, the announcement. You know, don't let them leave. Right, you know, the celestial beings who jealously guard the ultimate boon, the treasure, it's like, you know, have decreed, right? And they're on to us, right? So now we have to run, and we have to get through, you know. Let's say that we've gotten through customs. I like that notion, though, that, say, for the magic flight to happen, right? And two, of course, we have to say, you know, that it's not happening. We're stuck at the Eternal Airport. I'm sorry, there's no flights at the moment, right? Or the flights take forever, right? It's infinite. Infinite flight. So we have our lovely bird, our lovely multicolored, gigantic bird on the tarmac, on the runway, and, just can't get to it, right? Security has stopped us, they're patting us down, and we're being dragged back to the garden. Is there a way to still have the flight, let's say do it differently? Do we have to do an escape? Must it be the same, I guess one sort of flip around would be to turn that crazy bird around for all these, like, Joni Mitchell, she was like a ultimately, like, you know, Canadian musician who, you know, did really well in the I guess in the 70s, really 1970s, and too, I grew up with the music. I did not choose it, but I like it. Rather than to escape outwardly, escaping inwardly, and my mind just did this 180 and going, yeah, like, well, if it's eternal, if this place that we're running from is eternal, can't you just head in the opposite direction? And it's the same direction. Reality falls apart. That's an interesting notion. Is there something like an outside world going on that, you know, inside this domain of the jealous guardians, who, I'm just lifting from an earlier quote from Joseph Campbell. It's along the lines of, it was the threshold guardian who was there when the world was confined into the four cardinal points and up and down. Something along those lines, right? You know, the sky and the sea, right? Up and down. And so now I'm just sort of like thinking about it and imagining this kind of a window. They've blocked a window of escape, but they haven't blocked the inner window, which is to this different place. And what would that look like? What, Moss? Where are you taking us? I don't know, but it's very interesting. One thought I'm having right now is Das Ding, which is basically the nothing, right? Is the kind of Nietzschean abyss that, it, you know, supposedly exists in us all. And feel free to look it up, Das Ding. And so it's D-A-S and then Ding, D-I-N-G, and it's German for the thing. And I'm just thinking too, Marvel comic books, the thing from the Fantastic Four. I didn't think of that before. Now I can't get it out of my head. It's clobbering time. The character's name is Ben Grimm, and he's the thing, and he's a lovable brute. He's not even a brute, but anyways, he looks like one. He's huge, chunky, looks like he's made out of a bunch of orange bricks or stone. Anyways, yeah, turning it around, so our multicolored flight is, it's not leaving, but it's going deeper, and that there's this kind of alternate reality going on, and once again, sort of leaving that up to your imagination, you know, well, what would that look like? I do like the notion of that, though, because I was sort of, the last episode, I was stuck in paradise, and I was arguing for getting out, but I was also finding it sort of like, you know, but I don't, you know, personally, it's like I'm seeing an argument going on of like, if you leave, if you are able to leave, it's sort of like that you have to be forced to leave, or you're ejected, you're kicked out, which is a fantastic notion. And I wish that I had thought of it earlier. I'm sorry, you just don't fit in. The adventurer in paradise is, you know, just, you know, not up to snuff. What about all these other people? It's like, well, you know, they conform to paradise. You're not. You stick out like a sore thumb, and you're making us all look bad. Okay, so please, just, you know, take this on the chin, right? Take it for the team, and just go back. But we're talking about a magic flight. One of the associations, just as an aside, for magic flight, flying carpets, and growing up with, you know, these tropes of fantasy, and eventually, as an adult, I sort of pieced together. It's like, oh, you know, Islamic prayer carpets and flying carpets. That say this connection was made, that prayer, or say, you know, your spiritual life being seen as a flight, as a kind of way of getting away. With that in mind, and with the notion of, you know, oh, well, let's go the other direction, let's go deeper, why not that? Why not say, okay, we can't get out of paradise, we're trapped by these jealous guardians, so jealous, and then that say that that inward flight is through the imagination, and so it's like we are creating this inner life, this inner world, and flying, in a sense. I'm imagining the assembly of, or, you know, the, you know, putting together, imagining this multicolored avian machine, right? So it's built out of feathers. This kind of like a Daedalus. So Greek mythology, Daedalus and Icarus, and we're not doing Icarus, right? We build two birds, and the other bird is going to, you know, fall into the inner ocean. But our Daedalus bird is going to be okay. Moss, aren't you concerned? come on, it's mythology. Just bear with it. I like too that say it's not a process of mere, like, say it's not instantaneous. We don't have this immediate magical ride. And instead, we have, it takes a long time, like, so it's not overnight. And to the possibility of intensity. More realistic would be kind of like a, you know, it's intense for a while and then it decreases and maybe even stalls out. And this inner construction, this imagined flight machine, it's not working. And I'm imagining something like almost like, say, having the character, the adventurer, writing with, so there's a kind of author within the manuscript. And I'm going, I like that. That's very interesting and intriguing. And I don't think I've done very much. I know I've done some, like, say, having things written in a sort of diary or journalistic, where it's like a correspondence. I'm gonna, I know what an epistle is, so I'm gonna say epistle, because apparently that's, you know, in writing. But the connotation is quite strong, so I'm gonna say it's not. And, yeah. So not in that sense. And so just gathering my thoughts. I think it was a family went by. So we're talking about magic flight. We're talking about doing it differently. Imagining a flying machine, and that there's something there. It's almost like, say, the only thing, like, the adventurer has tried to escape, and so now is, for one reason or another, going, ah, okay, this is how I do it. This is how it's going to be. And constructs inwardly this thing. How about two that say that because of where they are, that's how things exist. I want to say, you know, the inward construction affects the outward. And that, you know, one day there's this thing, right, wrapped in paper, brown paper. It's this huge, you know, a lot of brown paper. And tearing off the brown paper, and it's been shipped by, you know, your imagination. And there it is, you know, the magical machine, the vehicle that will get you out of paradise. But that's not subversive enough. I want it to be this escape by which the character is still in paradise in one sense, but that they have this other existence, this other body, this imagined body, and that is what escapes and you know. But at the same time, I'm going, but that wouldn't be really returning. And then my counter to that is like, ah, yes, but paradise is not real, right? We're talking fiction, Moss. We're talking mythology. And it's like, you know, I'm having a sort of a logic moment of, aha, okay, right? A loophole in paradise. That's what the chapter will be called. And very creative, very imaginative escape. And also a weird moment of, well, if this is how we got into the mess, like, say, you know, if the mess is the imagination, then like, how did the adventurer get into this imagined state in the first place? I want to say something like, you know, oh, you know, it's Joseph Campbell's fault, blame Joseph Campbell. You know, it's his analysis these stories don't have any, you know, kind of references to, you know, the perfect place, the center, the central, you know, sort of plateau that everybody's searching for, world trees, whatever it is, you know, the mountain, right? You know, magic mountain, where the deities live, and so on and so forth. And with this sort of sabotage to the hero's journey, you know, blowing it up, and I was like, hey, can we arrange it in a different order and do it in a different way? Have something, you could say, well, the inspiration was the hero's journey, but, you know, it's morphed and mutated into this amazing monstrosity. So I'm just imagining sort of a similar kind of process. I like the idea too that an author, say, or a storyteller, what have you, it could be, you know, a musician or an artist who starts off, that is our adventurer, and they head into this sort of creative process, and ultimately find themselves trapped in one of my favorite descriptions is the everlasting, right? So they get there, and they get the ultimate boon, and they, you know, they're successful, but imprisoned, and you know, the guardians was like, nope. Welcome to the pitcher plant, right? You are, you know, you're in the plant now, being digested, and you could be, you know, you'll be put to good use, right? It's not a lost cause. And encountering others, other creatives who have ended up there, right? And they're experiencing eternity with you. And it's totally possible because, you know, time and space is an illusion. Lunchtime, doubly so. And too, it would be good to sabotage that quote, right? You know, let's utilize it. Let's change it around. And how about something like this? Eternity is an illusion. And that's a good one. Yeah, eternity is an illusion. And lunchtime is reality, or something like that, right? Yeah, but lunchtime is very real. We take it very seriously here. As we look at the structure, we're hitting the midpoint for the magic flight, thinking we've got it all figured out. So, you know, we have our boarding pass, and we are ready to, you know, get on board this beautiful bird, and you know, so take our seats, and the you know, the airplane people, pilot, etc., you know, please extinguish your this and that, and you know, plug in your seatbelt here, and prepare for liftoff. And we don't get away so easily, that there are these obstacles in the way. And to sort of do a self-parody, to kind of make fun of the obvious, that, you know, the artist's adoring public, the people who are interested in what you do, like, say, for yourself, you know, that they don't like things. They want you to keep going and keep keep doing what you're doing and keep writing. And you know, that is, it's a weird thing because it's a bit of a sabotage on the you know, motivation. And here I'm sitting here going, you know, but storytelling is a good thing, isn't it? And you know, we're all working on the narrative and moving things forward, right? That's good. And we're not stuck in time, right? We're stuck in eternity, rather. So here's this escape, but the obstacles being, you know, very mundane and very realistic, and you know, urging you to dwell in eternity, and to be cranking out your stuff. That's nice. As a creative, I'm sort of going, you know, why on earth would, you know, why on earth would we stop if it was presented in such a fashion, right? You go, oh, I've finally reached, you know, destination, right? This is the way to do it. I'm just looking at a water bottle. I have this water bottle that had a kind of decal or sticker on it, and the decal was getting a bit roughed up, so I scratched it off. And usually I don't notice the scratch marks, but I'm just seeing the scratch marks in this particular light on this particular day. And as the thrush knocks, that was a reference there. And the maybe my distraction is the construction and vice versa. The scratches kind of look like somebody with a tie at one point, and you can see it in different ways. The magic flight. Once again, the flip around is it not happening? And that ties into the imagination, like say that it's not a real thing, it's being imagined. And I suppose the bridge back to reality would be that the magic flight, that there's this kind of wake up, and we go back to whatever point it was before getting trapped. It is an interesting way to say it now. Like, I'm having an interesting moment of thinking of it that way. Whereas before, it was just all sunshine and... I was going to say sunshine and roses. And, you know, just very pleasant and nice. Whereas, you know, being trapped in eternity... maybe I could put that on my gravestone, right? Trapped in eternity, right? Just, what? I'm just kidding. So our adventurer wakes up and finds themselves at the artwork that had consumed them. And also too, let's say that there is a completion to it, and that it does do what, like say, setting out, right? There is this accomplishment that has been achieved, and there is this sort of transmission, you know, that the ultimate boon in storytelling, right? The ultimate boon, communicating. I think personally, the ultimate boon is that, say, I have received the ultimate boon from others. And it's this invitation to go on this adventure and to do storytelling and to have those experiences. And the experiences as treasure, not the books, not the after, you know, the byproduct, right? The end result. But going through and creating the thing, right? That, you know, that's the ultimate boon. Because in a, like, say, before doing that, there's this experience, like, say, you're outside of it and you're looking at it and you're going, that's amazing. How do they do that, right? This thing happened inside me. I can remember, at least, well, anyways, it was just amazed. The imagination, you know, that I could be there, be transported, and to be able to, say, create that, share that experience, that's a big deal. And two, obviously not for everybody, and everybody has their ultimate boon that they're after. But also, it's interesting that it's not the end result. It's not the actual book, and there's a kind of beauty to that. Oh, you say that today, Moss, but tomorrow you'll be all tears and something. So yeah, we're in the crisis. So why not talk about sort of the failure of the magic flight? What are you talking about, Moss? It was going so well. The Icarus quality. I think that would be an example of obstacle, or it doesn't work out. For some reason, I never get a feeling that Icarus dies. I always got a feeling that Icarus fell into the sea but survived. And maybe that was the end part. But I always feel like I imagined, you know, say that he had a life that wasn't like his father. The part that doesn't work is, you know, you're hitting that water pretty hard. Like, if we're talking about, you know, quite high, but what if it wasn't really high? And the things that sort of don't work out, that are definitely mythological, or sort of don't fly too close to the sun. Well, Dad, that's a bit impossible. You don't have to worry about that. But to the mythological mind, you know, it makes sense. You know, if you are able to fly, you're able to get close to the sun, right? And that's why, you know, that's why we keep finding birds charred all the time, right? These burnt up remains of birds falling from the sky. Okay, well, anyways. Or do birds know enough, right? They're sort of saying, you know, little bird, don't fly too close to the sun. Oh, whatever. I'm going to do what I want. It's so warm. It's so nice and warm. Into the, you know, I suppose the lesson is I almost want to say moth to the flame kind of idea. And that, say, one is drawn towards, like, say, they, because you can. And that's why we keep losing airplanes all the time. Just, again, it's like, no, that's not true. So we're subverting. We're turning this upside down. We're looking at a kind of Icarus kind of experience. I do like the notion that flight crashes, that it doesn't get us all the way there, and that, say, there is, you know, an adventure in, you know, yeah, we're outside of paradise now, but we're also in, you know, the bazaar. We're in this other place. And we're still working on getting back. There is this awareness, though, of imagination. I almost want to say a kind of like a flipping back and forth between that, the a kind of waking, you know, waking up and sleeping, not exactly comatose, but an awareness, and this sort of jumps ahead to the one of the later and last stages of this Master of Two Worlds. And then there's the finale, which is the freedom to live. And more thinking of, say, this idea of the two worlds. And what is it? As presented, the material and the spiritual. And a balancing between these, rather than a, you know, being overwhelmed by one or the other. So, sort of a crash landing and flipping back and forth, maybe at the edge, maybe sort of reaching the edge of the imagination. And, of course, the plane won't grow anymore. And I almost said grow, right? A growing plane. But as far as, say, the imagination, that it, you know, it is unable to make that journey across. And but I'm also thinking, let's say, making that passage requires another step, that something has to happen. We have this Icarus-like fall, you know, attempting to return, and there's also a kind of materialistic quality to that. Like, say, this, you know, say the sun is this kind of spiritual and being drawn towards it, versus the material of, you know, materialistic of the world, right? The physical versus the not physical. But in this escape vehicle, like, say, the crashing of the escape vehicle, it's damaged. It would take time to repair, but also, say, at the border, it's also about having to change the vehicle. It was okay for flying through the imagination, but, say, to leave it is next to impossible, or, say, also, too, I want to do a bit of wordplay, you know, say, the vehicle of the imagination. I keep seeing these wonderful works of fiction, art, graphic novels, and, for example, very visual, of course, and wanting to be, like, say, in some way, right, wanting to be involved in that. And not that there's a fear, like, say, not that there's a fear of failure, but more of a ability, which is nonsense, because, you know, I can do it. I think, you know, say, I have done stuff, and it's more a matter of letting go of the that it has to be you know, good, perfect, I should say. You know, a concern, even though a concern with making it good, that is there. I want it to be like these other things that I appreciate, and not something, you know, cobbled together. And it's so there's a frustration there, and ultimately why I'm not cranking stuff out is this care and concern for what it is that ultimately, you know, happens. So that's a question, and I'm just thinking of one thing I saw, a graphic novel, and years in the making, and then as far as the series, decades, like a lifetime of work going into oil painting. And so we're in the final part of this episode. We're in the third act, heading for the climax of the Magic Flight. And I've quite liked talking about, you know, say, finding something. You know, we're still doing a Magic Flight. It doesn't have to be that. I do like, too, the idea of, you know, say that it's the character that flies, you know, that you know, imagination, that they transform. They grow feathers and wings, or maybe they're a bat, or more of an insect. And that they... as they write, right, you know, they change, and eventually they're able to leave. And I wonder if the guardians of paradise are sort of watching this transformation. And two, how do you conceal it? You know, start wearing, you know, tent-like clothing, and their questions. As it progresses, it's like, you know, oh, you look a bit more, you know, you look different. You're not the same. Is everything going fine? It's like, oh, yes, paradise. It's great. Can't beat paradise. That's right. You just keep thinking that and everything will be okay. Jealously guarding. I guess for the jealously guarding, why, you know, these celestial beings are, you know, making such a big deal out of this. I keep coming back to this is that they are what they are because of that, and going back again to the threshold guardian. At crossing the first threshold, these beings who were there at the beginning and binding the world, that they, you know, of course, you know, we into a weird thing. It's like, you know, they are not us, you know, pushing it into a kind of realism, and, you know, they exist outside of the experience, but, you know, by making what has been made, that sort of defines them. So I'm just toying with this for a second. Without, you know, the treasure that they're guarding, you know, that they lose cohesion, I guess it would be, and at least that's their feeling. They're jealously guarding it, though, right? There's this jealous quality, and I keep thinking, you know, if they don't have it, right, then that diminishes them. At least that's their feeling, right? Jealousy is this feeling. But also there's something tragic there. That's not a good place to be, where on one hand it's like status driven. It's like, okay, they have we have more, and this defines, and they have less, right? And again, this defines their, you know, the lesser quality of mortals defines the greater quality of the immortal, celestial, etc. So it's a interesting thought, and I'm still stuck on jealous. Like, say, why? You know, why? It almost sounds like it's the other way. Like, that they're jealous of mortals. They're jealous of the adventurer, what the adventurer has. Like, and, you know, what would lead to that jealousy? You know, obviously, it's that they're jealously guarding. It's an unusual description, unusual way of describing. And I've thought about, like, say, previous episode, I thought about it. It's almost like a bathtub, right? That, you know, you unplug the bathtub and then whoosh, you know, it's drained out. If you take away this magic item, this ultimate boon, this treasure, it's just going to eliminate or take away the vitality of the place. And on one hand I like the notion, and two, I like exploring the idea. This has been, keeps being creative, and I keep finding these gold nuggets. Jealously guarding, though. It's a bit weird. I'm imagining sort of like, you know, a creepy old person, a creepy old guy, right? And, you know, looking out of the window, totally paranoid, right? You know, and it just makes it worse, right? People notice these things and say, what's up with this? What's up with the old guy? It's like, he's got this ultimate boon over at his place and he's worried that people are going to rip it off. It's like, it just, you know, just magnifies it. You know, better to go about your business normally and not be so obvious about it. And occasionally I'll run across people, or say even my own behavior, that I'll be concerned about, say, security. You know, I'll be overly concerned, and it's along the lines of, it sort of reminds me of, a hypochondriac. You know, somebody who's afraid, like, too much so, right? Because, you know, a bit is, sure, yeah, it's you know, it's definitely okay. But where your behavior influences your emotion, and you're, like, say, if you change the description to jealously guarding your health, you're going, that sounds a bit weird, right? I don't think I've ever jealously guarded my health. I've guarded my health. I've sort of thought of, you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, I, you know, gotta wash my, you know, wash my hands. I've always washed my hands. There was a joke I remembered, and talking about, say, you know, washing your hands, but it's only two fingers, right? Just, what is the, I don't have to wash my whole hand, right? I don't want to spend time, you know, I don't want to dry my, all of it. I just want to dry my, you know, my thumb and my forefinger, right? That's it. Forefinger? index finger. Anyways. But to jealously guard. And two, this is Joseph Campbell, you know, having some fun with the description. And so there's a bit of hyperbole here, but we're also describing mythological beings, and so there's room to expand and room to be imaginative and elaborate. So what's going to happen with our almost like a to be concluded statement?
Tune in next week to find out.
And our adventurer character, I've argued from the beginning, you know, why, you know, don't have to go. You can just, you know, adventure at home. And, you know, definitely if there's a pandemic, right, you can, there's so many things you can do at home. I started making sourdough. I thought I'd ruin my sourdough starter, and somebody told me, it's like, oh, no, you know, just start feeding it again and it'll be fine. And so you give it equal portions of water and flour, and that's how you feed it. And, you know, warmish water, and, you know, use the starter you have to make pancakes, you know, just sort of mix it up, and then ingredients, whatever. And so I'm back to pancakes, you know, no more, I have to wait, I can't make bread for a little bit, but I can make pancakes. And that's nice. What's going to happen with our adventure? And it seems as though the one that I'm talking about, the adventurer, not the one, as in oneness, right? You're the chosen one! that character in my hands is doomed to, and to in the meaning fated, to not succeed in the sense normally, right? So that the subversion is that I'm, you know, effecting is quite a different journey. And still I haven't been able to escape pondering, right? Even at, you know, good intentions, I'm still pondering, you know, the transformation or a change in how one perceives their, you know, their life, their, you know, their world. And you know, so that's my own stuff bubbling up, and so that's there. And then critiquing. Early on, I said, you know, in a way, adventuring, the adventure, this is a bad idea, right? You know, stay at home. Or stay near home. And, you know, it's not necessary to go off and to slay dragons, right? You know, write about it, you know, write a book, you know, slay the inner dragons. And has that been something, you know, have we seen that kind of novel before where, you know, Gandalf is at the door? I think I've said this a couple times now. You know, Gandalf is attempting to sign up adventurer, you know, the adventurer, and can't find the place, you know, number one, and even if able to, would, you know, it would never happen, and instead, it's something more of an internal adventure. Okay, take care and keep up the good work.